Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Anna Sale, in for Brian Lehrer on WNYC and WNYC.org. Cancer is frequently defined as the uncontrolled growth of abnormal cells in the body. It's a scary word and a scary idea. But a panel of experts is urging medical professionals to be more precise when talking about cancer or carcinoma, and not to use the words at all when talking about some common diagnoses. A paper published yesterday from a working group of the National Cancer Institute suggests that terminology, what's called cancer and what isn't, could go a long way in addressing overdiagnosis and overtreatment. Joining me to discuss all this is Dr. Barnett Kramer, director of the National Cancer Institute Division of Cancer Prevention. Hello and welcome to WNYC, Dr. Kramer.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
So let's get right into this particular recommendation on terminology. What is this working group saying about where the line should be drawn on what is cancer and what isn't?
Well, no one knows exactly where the line should be drawn. I think there's a growing recognition, however, that where we draw the line now triggers some overtreatment, because often terms like carcinoma or cancer are applied to tumors that are very, very slow growing, and of course they force the hand of physicians and patients toward definitive therapy. And the more we learn about the underlying biology of tumors and their natural behavior, the more we know that at least some of those tumors are best left watched before we charge ahead with therapy.
We definitely want to hear from listeners in this segment. If you're a medical professional or someone who's been diagnosed with cancer, we definitely want to hear from you about what you think about this. For cancer specialists, is this terminology issue one you've been grappling with? Would you treat cancer differently if it had a different name? The phone number 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And for cancer survivors, how does the word cancer influence the way you thought about your diagnosis? Did that change the way you thought about treatment? What do you think would change if this terminology shifted? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And as always, you can comment on our website, go to WNYC.org, click on the Brian Lehrer Show. Dr. Kramer, the paper specifically mentioned ductal carcinoma in situ as one example of a diagnosis that could just drop the word carcinoma. Some of our listeners might recognize that phrase because I see a statistic that one in every five breast cancer diagnoses is this ductal carcinoma in situ. What about this cancer suggests it could be a wait and watch cancer as opposed to go ahead and try to treat it aggressively?
Yes, so it is not the first time that suggestion has been brought up, and there's been a growing recognition that the very term carcinoma, ductal carcinoma in situ, can drive action and can drive therapy, and sometimes the therapies that we use for ductal carcinoma in situ, or DCIS, are every bit as aggressive as those that we use for truly invasive cancers that have more lethal potential. The subject was discussed at a National Institutes of Health Consensus Development Conference several years ago, in which a number of people questioned the application of the term carcinoma in situ to this phenomenon and urged us to reconsider the terminology so that people and women could be a little more reassured when they heard that they had such a tumor.
So is this terminology framing, is this geared towards patients in the public or more towards medical professionals? What are you trying to sort of influence here?
Well, a little bit of both. It has precedent in that in the past, cervical lesions sometimes were referred to as cervical in situ carcinoma, carcinoma in situ, CIS. And there was a concerted effort to change the terminology, both to help doctors explain to their patients what it actually meant, what the diagnosis meant, and also to help women understand the difference between these non-invasive lesions and truly invasive cancers.
And how much do we know about the difference between non-invasive and invasive? I mean, how much do we know about what is something to watch and what is safe to watch versus aggressively treat?
That is one of the most important areas of scientific research now in the National Cancer Program. Unfortunately, even though we know that only some of the DCIS lesions that are diagnosed are going to go on to a life-threatening form of cancer, we don't have a firm grasp of which ones they are. Nevertheless, attaching a term like cancer or carcinoma sometimes forces our hand into immediate therapy. The same type of phenomenon goes on in prostate cancer, where low-grade prostate cancers are often treated, and in part because they are called cancer, and that raises the fearsome specter of a cancer that would progress if left unattended. But we're learning in prostate cancer, as we are in DCIS, that at least some of those lesions could be watched, and there's growing enthusiasm for watchful waiting or something called active surveillance. That is, following the patients very, very carefully, and only at the first sign of tumor progression or a change in what the tumor looks like under the microscope is therapy applied.
We are taking your calls. The phone number is 212-433-9692. Nancy in Manhattan.
Yes, hi. 40 years ago, I was diagnosed with precancerous cells in the cervix. I was pregnant at the time. It was a time when you couldn't even mention the word cancer. It endangered everything around you. It totally threw my husband into a panic because there had been cancer in his family. We divorced. There I was alone with two small children. I so appreciate this discussion because now I'm told by my gynecologist in those days, they would never, in these days, it would never be said that it was cancer, and such a therapy would never have been gone into. Meantime, I've had breast cancer. It's been treated. I'm fine. I'm very upbeat about it. But people are talking about it.
Yes. So first of all, I'm so glad to hear that you're doing well. And of course, we've made a lot of progress in the management of cancer. And I'm glad to hear that you're doing so well after your diagnosis of breast cancer. And I'd have to also point out that the fact that we know so much about managing breast cancer rests in part on our investments on research in breast cancer and the many trials over the decades. But you point out another extremely important issue, and that is labeling can hurt. And so just by calling things pre-cancer, some people get the impression that the abnormality will without fail progress to cancer. And as you now know, that's not the case in the case of your so-called precancerous lesion. And that's good news, too. It took years of research and then ultimately a change in the terminology that helped both doctors and patients sort things out when they were told they had cervical abnormalities. Thank you for making those points.
Yeah,
they're both very, very important.
Thank you for your call, Nancy. Dr. Kramer, I have a question about implications for insurance and what is covered and what kind of treatments are covered. If we stop using the word cancer for some of these conditions, are insurance companies going to stop reimbursing if a patient decides, you know, I'm not comfortable just waiting and watching, I want this out?
So now you're outside of my area of expertise, but I could only give my opinion, and that is based on what I know. I don't think that insurance companies would withhold payment for treatment. And the reason I carry that opinion is that despite the change in terminology from carcinoma in situ to cervical intraepithelial neoplasia, which, of course, doesn't contain the word cancer in it for cervical lesions, companies, third-party payers, continue to pay for appropriate management. And so I would be, frankly, very, very surprised if changing the terminology had any effect on the ability of being covered for appropriate therapy.
Ciro in Bergen County, New Jersey, we have just a few seconds, but what's your story?
Now, my story is I was admitted in emergency for rectal bleeding, found that I had colon cancer. They did a colectomy, and their process was recommending over-treatment as a precaution. And my attitude was, why do you need to try to kill an ant with a sledgehammer? I had the operation and understood it a lot more clearly than I thought the medical industry did, and that it was an aberration because of my lifestyle.
So you had surgery, and then you did not have chemo.
Right, and we're doing tracking now. So we're tracking markers with blood tests and possible CB, CT scan.
So you were doing the waiting and watching. So Dr. Kramer, quickly, just what happens next? Are we going to start hearing the word cancer less or in a more nuanced way?
It's hard to say, and there's a difference between growing recognition of the issue and actually changing terminology. That takes a lot more consensus than we have now.
All right, Dr. Barnett Kramer, Director of the National Cancer Institute's Division of Cancer Prevention, thanks so much for joining us and explaining this to us. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. It's my pleasure.
I'm Anna Sale, in for Brian Lehrer on WNYC and WNYC.org. Tomorrow, Mike Pesca is in to host. Have a great day.